You're listening to KBOO KBOO Portland. Next up is Transpositive PDX with your hosts Emma and Jean.
And good evening. Welcome to Transpositive PDX. This is Jean Bryant. I'll be one of your co-hosts this evening. I use she and her pronouns.
And my name is Emma Lugo, and I use she and her pronouns.
And with us this evening is...
My name is Kai Jensen, and I use they, them pronouns.
Welcome, Kai.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. So we're here tonight. We're going to talk about the Women's March coming up next month. And we just wanted to kind of have a chat in studio and find out what's going on. So let's talk about the details first. What's happening? What's happening in March?
Yeah, what's the plans?
Yeah, we're really excited. The march is going to be happening on March 1st. And it's going to kick off from PSU and do kind of a march around the park blocks and come back to the PSU campus. I'm going to have to cheat and find out what time it is.
Oh, sure. We'll kind of fill in. So it's March 1st. Is that a Sunday?
Yes.
Sunday,
yes,
March 1st. Okay.
And I like that route.
Right.
I like that route. That seems like that's going to be a really good route.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the same one we took last year. Yeah, we did the same thing last year. The first year, it was a different route.
Well, yeah, we started down at the
riverfront, right. Yeah. Is this the third one or the fourth one?
Oh, God.
I can't even remember anymore.
The first one was in 2017.
Oh, okay. So this is the third one, 17, 18. No, this is the fourth one.
Yeah. I'm wondering, did we have one in 2018?
I'm not sure.
I was not in a country at that time, so I'm not certain either.
I don't know. In 2018, I went to Salem for the one in Salem, so I don't remember what happened in Portland that year. I know there was... So we're going to get into all of that in just a minute. Yeah, we're going to be talking about... some of the stuff going on with all of that. But it's like, so this is our fourth year and it's happening on March 1st. That's a Sunday, and Kai is just going to find out what time it starts at. And we're also going to be kind of talking about the history of the march, what's been going on with the march. So,
well, I don't think the motivations have really changed from the first one.
Right, exactly.
In fact, I think the motivations have gotten stronger.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It kicks off at noon. It's from noon to 3, and that includes some folks speaking at the beginning, and then I believe the plan is to actually march starting at 1, and then we'll have some things that go on after as well. There'll be some folks with tables set up that have different resources and from different community organizations. That's still kind of coming together, but there should be some good resources for people, as well as a great lineup of speakers, which is also still
kind of
gelling.
Yes.
Still gelling.
If people want to be involved, if they want to support the march, is it too late to get plugged in and...
No, we definitely need volunteers. The best way to get plugged into that is to go to the website, which is womensmarchpdx.com, and it's women spelled with an X, so W-O-M-X-N-S, March, P pdx.com. If you spell it the other way, you'll get redirected. But that we are across all of our social media and website and everything, we're using that X to be really explicitly inclusive mm-hmm. of folks, non-binary folks, trans folks.
Okay. So it starts at noon on Sunday, March 1st, down on the park blocks down by PSU.
Yep.
And the public speaking, is that going to be kind of down on the PSU end of things?
You know, they did the walkthrough today, and because I was coming to this, I didn't go to the walkthrough. Mm. But yeah, I believe that they are the like program part will be there at the PSU campus, kind of right. where that like amphitheater space is, and there'll be a stage and stuff.
Just kind of like it was last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's start with, can we talk first of all, just, about, let's go to the spelling first, just so people understand why we're spelling it W-O-M-X-N, because some of our listeners may not understand that that's the word we're using to be inclusive. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, the X is something that has been introduced alternate spellings with both an X and a Y, and I've seen kind of a variety of spellings, but they were introduced to one to kind of indicate like women are not like a part of men or like a second class kind of like that they're like we're our own people. But also to be very explicit that we're including trans women, non-binary folks, anybody who identifies with the movement and the cause is welcome to be there. And that's why that X is really important and why we've made sure that across all of our branding, all of our social media and website and everything, that we're consistently using that X to, in a shorthand way, communicate to folks, we want everybody here.
And that's nice because I remember the first March, mm-hmm. There were issues still. And I would assume that there probably still will be, hopefully just less than. And it's really nice that the branding and the organizers are putting forth that intent that's represented by that spelling. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, I was there at the march in 2017, and I honestly probably wouldn't have gone had a friend of mine not explicitly been like, I'm going, come with me, because it wasn't necessarily clearly welcoming to trans non-binary people. It wasn't necessarily we did a better job than maybe that national average in terms of trying to be inclusive of Black women and people of color in that initial march, I think. But there have still been struggles to be as in, like, to figure out how to be inclusive in a way that's not tokenizing or that isn't, you know, saying all the right words but not really following through and creating a space where people of color, black women, indigenous people felt like they were included. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm really pleased and proud to be part of the group that has been organizing the march this year, because it really does feel like a truly intersectional group. And we make mistakes, but we intentionally make space in meetings to have conversations about, like, what is your understanding of what white supremacy is? Let's talk about it. Let's talk about how that shows up in this space. What's your understanding of trans and non-binary, like, how do microaggressions happen? Like, how does that show up in the space? And like, people are really showing up and doing the work, and it feels like a really, I think that this started to create some hope in a very hopeless feeling situation after the 2016 election. And being part of this group is kind of reawakening that hope for me. It's like, okay, we're figuring out how to come across, like, generational gaps, cultural gaps. Like, we're coming from a lot of different backgrounds and really working together and working through some of those things.
Yes. Well, thematically, I'm so glad to hear this and to hear it happening now, when we have such an opportunity this year to begin to rebuild, heal, come together as a coalition, the whole intersectionality. We've got to join together this year. I mean, we really have to do it. There's no time to waste.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain then, so the X, why did we specifically choose the letter X as opposed to other letters, such as Y, for instance?
Mm.
Do you know?
I don't know exactly how we came to adopt the X versus the Y spelling or other things, other than I've done a little bit of research, and it seems like that X has come from a community of Black women who started using it. And if you go to our website and you scroll down the FAQ, and there's a section that's like, why are you using the X? And there's a link there to an article that kind of explains why Black women started using that X, and as a way of representing a more intersectional approach to feminism and to organizing together as women.
Okay.
So there's a race component as well as a like gender inclusiveness.
Sure. Yeah. X is like is a mark of identity. Definitely. Yeah. That's so great. I'm so glad to hear that, because I had thought, and maybe I'm totally wrong about this, I had thought that, so like for a long time, there was like this movement. I mean, I'm a feminist. I've been a feminist a long time. And so like I follow these conversations. And for a long time, like there was a certain group of women who started to use the spelling women, W-O-M-Y-N, like as a way like of kind of reclaiming female identity for women. But that same group of people that was using the spelling W-O-M-Y-N sometimes also excluded trans women from that like particular movement in terms of spelling. And so I guess I thought for the longest time that when they added the X, instead of calling it like the Women's March, W-O-M-Y-N, that there was like a way of like kind of rejecting that. Like, but when you talk about it from the perspective of like using an X, which oftentimes was like used, you know, in like during the time between the end of the Civil War and the whole sharecroppers era, when people used X, and there was also X was used like just as a kind of a blank categorization of an identity. So, and then it was reclaimed during the Black Panther movement, and it was reclaimed by like radical Black activists and folks who were like, you know, into like reclaiming those kind of identities as a way of like, you know, really showing pride. So maybe, so that you're kind of saying maybe that's where the X goes in to the W-O-M.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Okay. Thank you. Can we talk about the history of the herstory of the march? Sorry.
Sure.
Let's go back to 2017, and sort of, can we kind of unpack the timeline of what's happened since 2017? Because a lot of people maybe don't quite understand all of the politics that have been involved and what's going on with the Women's March, not just nationally, but also here in Portland, because we've had our own kind of conversation here in Portland about how to move it along.
Mm-hmm.
Can you sort of give us a synopsis?
Yeah. I guess as much as, like I said, I kind of got dragged along to the first one and was happy to be in a crowd of other people who were feeling pissed off and scared and
100,000 white women with pink hats.
It was cool to see so many people kind of converging together, and to see really like the memory that sticks with me from that first Women's March is in one of the places where we marched past a big parking garage, and there were these like three kids who probably couldn't have been more than like 8 or 9 with banners and making lots of noise. And they were just, you could tell that they were so excited, and that this was like a thing that felt hopeful in a time that felt really scary. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was that was what the, like, that made my whole march. I was like, this, yes, that's what we're trying to do. And I think that from the, I wasn't involved, like I said, in the planning of that initial march. But my understanding is that there were some tough conversations and a fair amount of turnover and leadership, and organizationally, there were some personality conflicts and other problems with trying to establish leadership. So
there was also a problem in the first year specifically with a member of our community.
Yes, there was.
Who allegedly embezzled about $20,000 yes. from the march. Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh, I had forgotten about that. Yeah.
So that was very unfortunate.
It was very, yeah, and presented a challenge moving forward.
It really mm-hmm. did, yeah. Mm-hmm. But then 2017, I remember now, there was on Inauguration Day, on the anniversary of Inauguration Day, there were like these days of action thing that happened downtown. And I know that there was like something that was led by like women of color and like people of color.
Was that in 2017 or 2018?
In 2018, I'm okay. sorry, 2018, yeah. Because 2018, like pretty much like the page that used to be the Women's March kind of just fell apart. Mm. I mean, there was a lot of people, there was a lot of going back and forth and, you know, really legitimate claims about how, like, there was this failure to understand how intersectionality really mm. applies to, like, the core of organizing for the Women's March. And so a lot of people kind of left and abandoned it. So 2018 was sort of, there was still a lot happening. I remember 2018, Candy Brings Plenty was one of the main organizers mm-hmm. for something that was going on. There was stuff going on downtown that day. And there was also like the socialist group was doing stuff that day too. There was like some big march. And then there was kind of like a thing that was sort of called the Women's March that happened that day. But it wasn't the same thing as what happened the next year. So let's go to the next year. Then 2019, what happened then?
Yeah, so in 2019, there was a decision that rather than stay affiliated with the National Women's March because of some concerns that weren't being addressed around the organizers at the national level, there, which have now, they've started addressing them. My understanding is that most of the original, the board that served in 2019 has stepped down and stepped down prior to the 2020 march because of issues of anti-Semitism and other failures to be truly inclusive. So the Portland folks decided to kind of separate from that national brand and do their own thing mm-hmm. Last year. And this year, a number of the same folks, but also some fresh people, including myself, have joined the committee. And we have a really strong contingent of women from the Native community here that are participating. Della Ray is our like march leader and coordinator. So she stepped into a leadership role for the march. And she's fantastic. And yeah, we've got a pretty, I'd say there's anywhere between 8 and 12 of us that are like regularly meeting weekly, and another probably that many people who are working sort of behind the scenes to help make stuff happen, even if they're not able to show up every week for the meetings.
That's fantastic. So I remember, one of the things I remember now about 2019, part of the conversation with this happening last year, was like over the winter and in the fall before that, folks from Black Lives Matter, like, were pointing out that you're trying to do this women's march on the same weekend as MLK organizing.
Yes. Yes.
And they're saying, you know, we cannot, I mean, first of all, if you're going to do this thing that's going to be drawing in, like, you know, thousands of white women, then why don't you have them turn out for, you know, to honor Dr. King and to honor the legacy and what it means to, like, you know, really talk about the issues that are matter to people of color on this weekend that's already been set aside as a federal holiday to yes. honor those people. And so
Yeah, and that is why last year they made the decision to change the March date to March 1st. So March is Women's History Month.
Yes, thank you.
It feels like a more appropriate timing to respect and honor the activities that are already planned every year on MLK weekend. So, yeah, that was a move that was made last year and has been upheld this year. So that's why we don't have the march in January at the same time that the national and the Vancouver one this year, and lots of marches around the country. We shifted it into March because who doesn't love a march in March?
But exactly. Also, right. And it's like, why have a women's march that's about women and about empowering women, and then doing it on a day that's so depressing as January 20th, you know?
I'm remembering the first one, and I've got pictures of my signs. Well, my signs just ran. The paint just ran. Everything, you know, the cardboard, everything was just a soggy, sodden mess. Mm-hmm. It really threw a damper on, it was wonderful that we all showed up. But yeah, you know, I don't know.
I got news for you.
It could rain in March, but it's not going to be January.
Yeah.
Last year was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was great last year. Yeah. So is Jules Garza still working with the committee this year?
Yes. Jules is one of those kind of behind the scenes people this time around. Oh, I've seen her at a couple of things here and there. But I know she's pretty busy. She's got many things happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah. So let's talk about, so why would it matter for at a Women's March to talk about trans folks and non-binary folks? What does that have to do with women?
Yeah, it's a question that I've been thinking a lot about. I identify as non-binary and genderqueer and also trans. And I don't identify as a woman, so I had a lot of thoughts about what does it mean for me to show up and get involved and participate in this committee. And I decided that if I didn't show up and make space for other folks like me, then places like this don't shift to being more inclusive. And to be, like, it wasn't me that was like, we have to have the X. That was happening already. So they're definitely, the folks there are already committed to making some, making space and educating themselves. But, you know, without somebody representative of that community in the room, you can only do so much as an ally to kind of make your best guess of how to make that space inclusive. But I think that non-binary folks and trans folks experience the patriarchy in some overlapping ways and some unique ways from folks who are like cis women. But one of the key things at the heart of the march is fighting back against the idea that men in power can say awful, sexist, terrible things on have it get covered in the national news and have that be okay. Mm-hmm. Like that impacts me just as much as it does a cis woman, and like maybe more so, because when you walk through the world and people aren't sure what your gender is, sometimes they take it upon themselves to do some pretty inappropriate things to try to figure that out for themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, that was only one of the many reasons that we marched in 2017, but it's one that I think lots of people can identify with. So I think it's primarily like, you know, we also, there aren't any men on the planning committee, but like we want men to show up and be allies and like participate, not in a way that takes away from the women who and non-binary and trans folks who are there you know, we experience things differently, but like we want to have as many allies show up as possible. We need to be having those conversations, you know, those conversations across communities, because I don't know if you all have been listening to the impeachment proceedings, mm-hmm. but every now and then, you know, the OPB so has to go away if you don't want to.
Yeah.
So the thing that I keep thinking about as I hear these snippets or longer conversations, you know, is I hear one message coming from one side of the aisle and another message coming from the other side of the aisle, but nobody's really talking to each other. Those talking points seem to have been distributed and then rehashed over and over again from more or less the same angle. That's not a productive way of making a country that functions. It's not a productive way of making a community that functions. So I think the more often we have opportunities to bring people of different backgrounds together in an intersectional way and talk about the things that we want to change, that's what gives me some hope.
Like capitalism, the economy, ecology, children's rights, healthcare, the prison system, what else? Food, water,
Mother Earth,
decolonization, restoration of indigenous rights,
the right to have a safe place to sleep every night,
reproductive rights. Yes, exactly.
Yes, and they're all under attack.
Exactly. And what does that have to do with?
Yeah. Exactly.
We all are part of that.
Because we are all under attack.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're all under the heel of the patriarchy, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And that's why.
You are listening to 90.7 KBOO FM. We're at the top of the show right now, and we're here tonight talking about the Women's March, which is going to be happening
on Sunday, March 1st.
Yeah. 12 o'clock down in the park blocks downtown.
It's going to start at the PSU campus.
Yeah, right. So I wanted to ask, kind of shifting subjects just a little bit, one of the problems that keeps on coming up with the Women's March that's a really totally fair critique is what is the Women's March doing here in Portland to center and prioritize the voices of people of color?
Yeah, we have very intentionally reached out to communities of color and encouraged people to take leadership positions. So Della Ray is a black woman, and she, like I said, is the organizer of this year's march. We've got several other people on the committee who come from black communities, who come from the indigenous communities. So we're doing more work to have a council that, or like a committee that reflects the community, and also being really intentional about holding listening sessions and meet and greets around the community in places. You know, we had one out in Gresham this year, that east of 82nd Street, you know, gets neglected a lot of the time, but
not by the people who live there.
it's one of, you know, the Rockwood neighborhood is the most diverse neighborhood in Multnomah County.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for acknowledging that.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that, like, outside of the immediate Portland bubble, we do have huge amounts of diversity. I think it's like 33% of folks in East Multnomah County.
Do you mind if I interrupt you?
Yeah, go ahead.
And just say, like, I think that framing is really important. And so, like, for me, I would really prefer that, like, rather than we say outside of the Portland bubble, because to me, like, East Portland is Portland.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
It's just as much Portland as where we're sitting right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess,
You understand what I'm saying though, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Outside of the folks who have some white, who are mostly white and have a little bit of economic privilege and some class privilege, maybe some educational privilege, who like can afford to pay the rents that you have to pay to live in this part of town and have, you know, the free time to like go to meetings, you know, planning meetings for stuff that happens downtown, basically. Like that's the Portland bubble.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the people who are working for a living wage, who, you know, are coming from, who are trying to just get a living wage really.
Yes.
And who like, you know, come from like all over the planet, and black and brown people, they're Portland. That's the Portland bubble right there. That's the center of Portland is like to me right now, all of the really exciting stuff that's happening in Portland is happening east of 82nd.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we kind of, I feel like I'm not trying to, please excuse me if I sound like I'm like saying anything like that comes across as like trying to be a lecture. Cause I'm really not trying to, I'm just saying like, I hear it all the time. And it's like over there, east of 82nd is like where so much vitality is happening. So much amazing energy is happening. And like somehow we just have to get the people who are over on this side of town to, like you're doing. You said you went out there to Gresham, so that's great.
Yeah, yeah. And we've also been we've had a number of different kind of meet and greets and listening sessions and things like that in Northeast and North Portland and some of the more historically Black and African American communities. So we're making attempts to kind of meet people where they are, make sure there's snacks and food available, you know, make those spaces as welcoming as possible. And we still have work to do, I think. But it's one of the most diverse groups of people that I've been involved with since I have lived in Portland, and I get involved in a fair amount of stuff. So.
That's wonderful. Can you explain to me, just from your perspective, as however you identify, why is it important to like focus on people of color? Why is it important to prioritize and center the voices of people of color in the march?
I'm a white person. One of the most important things that we can do to address the white supremacy that exists in this colonized land is to shift the focus of who we lift up and whose voices we center. So centering people of color, Black and Indigenous people in this process, I think it lifts everyone by focusing on the communities that have been most impacted by the system of the patriarchy, the white supremacy that our culture has developed since white folks landed here, you know, hundreds of years ago,
and took the entire land. And also, like, decimated 65 million people through disease and through slavery and through colonization.
Yeah, through a myriad of terrible things. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important that if we're going to move past that history while continuing to acknowledge it and work together to build a cohesive place and try to take care of this land that we live on now. You know, one of the things that we do every meeting is read the land acknowledgement to kind of center the fact that, like, the land that we live on here in Portland didn't belong to us. We stole it. And so I think that centering that and making sure that we're being really intentional to reach out to folks of color, but not in a way that's tokenizing. Like we like, and not in a way that isn't like, I haven't done my homework. I'm going to just like try to get as many like folks to tick my diversity boxes as I can, but then do shitty things and microaggressions all the time. Like we're like, it feels like we're homework in a way, so that when we bring, like, when folks come in, and you know, it's not a bunch of white people being like, who do I know? Do I know someone from another community that I can bring in? It really is like folks who have been involved for a number of years and are really excited about the Women's March and are passionate about it, and they volunteer a lot of their time, and you know, like I said before, the issues that, like, the reasons that we march are intersectional issues. So by focusing and kind of giving the mic, giving the floor to communities of color, to Black and Indigenous folks, we're doing everybody a favor.
Mm-hmm. Is there a specific theme? I mean, has there been any discussion around a theme for this year's march? I mean, the original one was just kind of an outpouring of...
It was like shock and grief.
Shock and grief.
Yeah.
Around his election.
Steal my election, yeah.
The kind of... we have a couple of taglines for the march this year. So it's... Portland's Women's March for a Future, and the kind of theme is Remember and Rise. So we spent quite a bit of time actually talking about, like, what do we want to do? What is the march? Like, is it still relevant? Why is it still relevant? Why are we doing it, you know, 3 years later? And what do we want to do when we're, you know, do we just hold this march once a year, or do we want to be doing other things? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we have decided this year is that we actually do want to have a year-round presence and be doing some more community building. So the remembrance part is about remembering the women who've come before, the people whose land we live on now, really thinking about that diverse history of people. And the rise is figuring out how do we move forward in a way that is lifting the most marginalized and underserved and underrepresented people. How do we lift those people by way of doing that, like, you know, improve things for all of us who aren't old white dudes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about some of the really traditional kind of issues that, like, are just so under attack right now nationally? We might, like, here in Portland, we might, like, have some reprieve from them, but, like, in the South, where I'm from, like, it's getting so bad for women. I mean, there's, like, several states in the South now where, like, you really can't get an abortion. It's just, like, so hard. And Alabama's the worst. In Alabama, like, you know, they're trying to criminalize, I mean, just trying to get any kind of, like, reproductive access. And they're going after doctors. They're going after women, mm-hmm, who are seeking reproductive health care. Mm-hmm. Are we going to talk about any of those issues at the Women's March this year here in Oregon? Or is it on an issue?
I definitely think it's an issue. I'm not certain who we've got in the lineup in terms of who's speaking and what they're talking about yet. Mm-hmm.
Do you know if Planned Parenthood's involved this year?
We have been talking with Planned Parenthood, and I think also NARAL. So, yeah, I think that I don't want to speak for everybody on the committee, but I'm definitely a person who supports reproductive justice and equal access. I think that access to abortions is access to health care.
And reproductive health care.
Yeah, that's vital. The right to have access to birth control in whatever form works with your body, and you know, not everybody that has a uterus is necessarily identified as a female or as a woman. And, you know, I think it's important that we include everybody in those conversations of reproductive justice.
I don't have a uterus, and I just started the conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
For this radio show.
Yeah, I
because it's important to me.
Yeah, I guess I'm agreeing with you. I think it is super important for lots of people. I guess I just raise it as like an acknowledgement that reproductive justice includes more than just abortion
of
care,
course.
Which I didn't mean to imply that you agree with that.
Yeah, no, I didn't think you were implying that. Thank you. Thanks so much. This is like an example of how we have conversations in the trans and non-binary community. We're like really sure. We try so hard not to offend each other. And then sometimes we do anyways. And when we do, we just have to apologize and hope that we'll get forgiven. Anyways, you're listening to 90.7 KBOO Community Radio. We're going into the last part of the show. We're talking about the Women's March, which is happening on March 1st. That's a Sunday, March 1st. What is the website again for the Women's March?
Yeah, it is women, spelled with an X, so WOMXNS, March, PBX.com.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a really good event this year. Do you have, what are some of the needs that are still, are there any needs that we can help sort of? You know, like, do you need volunteers for something or?
Yeah, we're going to need lots of volunteers. The best way to sign up is go to the website, and there is a form that you can fill out to subscribe. If you subscribe to the website, that also gets you subscribed to our MailChimp e-newsletter, and so you'll get kept in the loop. We've got a sign making party happening soon. We've still got a few planning meetings between now and then, but we'll need help with setup, tear down, helping folks navigate the table setup, folks to help. Yeah, there's lots of places that you can plug in. Depending on what your skill set is, there's a home for you. So go to the website, fill out that form, indicate that you are interested in being a volunteer. You also can email directly volunteer@womensmarchpdx.com, mm-hmm. and that'll get you added to the list as well.
What about, what about women's health issues across the aging cycle? Like, is there any, are older women represented this year? Our elders?
Yeah, the...
And the leadership that they... I guess Del is... I don't know if Del would consider herself an elder yet or not.
I don't know everybody's age on the planning committee, but... I'm 34 and I'm definitely not the youngest person. I know we've got people in their 20s, for sure. And we've got folks all the way up, I'm guessing, into their 70s, mm-hmm. Without hopefully offending anybody, because we don't tell each other how old we are when we do our check-ins with names and pronouns and things at the beginning. But yeah, it's a pretty... I think we've got a good swath of different ages of people represented. And actually, I would say the majority of people on the committee are probably in their 40s, 50s, 60s. Mm-hmm.
It's good to have a healthy mix.
Yeah.
I think that having elders also being centered in the conversation helps to bring in the long view, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's people who have been around who have been doing this fight for 50 years, for 60 years. I mean, they've been involved in civil rights movement, Black Power movement, you know, Chicano, Latinx movements for justice. I mean, indigenous peoples movements around the world, going back two and three generations. And people who maybe have two generations experience have so much knowledge. Just like when we add people who have the indigenous voices and those experiences, when we also include our elders and center our elders, like in our conversation, it's a really important part of like centering the vision of the march, you know, because it sounds like what you're trying to do is you're trying to have like a really focused, but a really like intersectional, like perspective. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to be really inclusive and kind of acknowledge the mistakes that we've made in the past, you know, focusing too much on white people, too much on middle-class people. And, but it's also important to like make sure that those conversations with our elders are really centered too, because our elders can talk about, oh yeah, I remember like when you couldn't even get birth control, you know, and that cuts across all lines, you know, back in the day when like, you know, you had to go to some back alley somewhere or when you didn't even get paid anything, you know. And what about economic stuff? Are we talking about economic justice issues in the march this year?
I mean, it's important to me. I make less than $20,000 a year right now. And I have 2 master's degrees.
Congratulations.
Thanks. I have lots of skills that the gig economy doesn't want to pay for. But yeah, I think it's an important, you know, we've got a record number of people experiencing houselessness, sleeping outside in all sorts of terrible weather, and even not terrible weather, like everyone deserves a place, a safe place to sleep at night. You know, I think we've got, of course, the more money you earn, the easier it is to volunteer for stuff. So I think that, you know, we've been intentional about, you know, providing snacks, trying to make sure that the places that we're at are accessible and on transit lines, and I think that helps bring more people makes it more accessible for more people to mm-hmm. access being part of the planning. But I do think we are being intentional about including people who come from all sorts of socioeconomic backgrounds.
That's great. I mean, because I know, like, in my field, I work in a field that is almost entirely dominated by women. So it's mostly women. It's definitely much lower paid than a lot of other occupations, you know, but we take care of people. Mm-hmm. We take care of people who really need assistance and who really need help. And so it's the kind of work that, like, women tend to get kind of still, even in this day and age, even in the 21st century, a lot of women still get pushed into certain labor ghettos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then a lot of the women that I work with, they're single moms and they've got kids that they're supporting on their salaries, which oftentimes are like less than a living wage, less than $15 an hour. And they're taking care of 1, 2, 3 kids sometimes. Sometimes the dad's there, sometimes he's not there. And I'm just wondering if, like, we're addressing some of these economic realities at the Women's March this year. And, you know, the kind of decisions that, like, our country continues to make that are against the interest of working women.
Yeah, I think that despite the fact that we've been having a conversation for decades, you know, that elders and folks generations ahead of us have been saying, hey, why is it that women are, you know, stuck in these jobs where they're not getting paid the same as men who do similar work? They're like you were talking about, they're often in lower paid jobs working in healthcare and teaching and taking care of kids, and that those things are important. It's important to recognize the emotional labor that goes into those things. Mm-hmm. It's important to recognize unpaid labor. You know, you've got single moms working really hard, multiple jobs to raise their kids. And it's important to recognize the moms who are able to stay home with their kids and aren't getting paid, but are doing important work. I think that that's definitely, you know, there's so many things to be concerned about, right? Wage equality and the wage gap is one of them. The environment is another one. Mm-hmm. The racial inequities, particularly, you know, in Oregon, we have our own unique set of very troubling racist laws that were on the books for a super long time. In addition to the awful things that we did to the indigenous people who were here long before the white folks showed up. So there's a laundry list of issues, I think, that we bring with us to the Women's March, and I think we're going to do our best to touch on as many of them as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all reasons to turn out, but they're also just reasons to more broadly get organized. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I feel like as trans, I mean, for me personally, as a transgendered woman, I mean, my identity as someone who's transgender does not take away from my identity as a woman. I mean, I've been a feminist since I was like 17 years old. And, you know, I grew up, you know, in the women's movement. I mean, I spent all of my time, even before I transitioned, I was in the women's movement. I listened to all of the things that like women have been struggling for, not just white women, but women of color, black and brown women. And I mean, these issues all interconnected, and a lot of them we still need to march for. I mean, a lot of these bread and butter issues like the wage gap, child care, access to health care, social security, you know, fathers not paying their child support. These are all issues that are really, really important to women. Reproductive health care, you know, paid family leave. All of these things are really, really important to women. And there's been some progress, but there's still so much more progress that needs to happen. And
what's scary is that the progress has not only stalled, it's being eroded.
It is. Unfortunately,
we're slipping backwards like out here slowly.
Out here in the 9th Appellate District, which is the whole Western District, which was considered like the most liberal appellate district,
yep,
like
in the
country. We've like lost, I think we've lost like 9 seats on the 27 seat. So that the thing people don't understand about that appellate district is that like whenever anything goes up for appeal to the federal, mm-hmm, to the federal system before it goes to the Supreme Court, it's going to go there. And you would think that like in the Western states, which are overwhelmingly blue states, that there would be some kind of reflection of that reality in the appellate court, but they're turning it red. They're totally politicizing it. And they're making it like this like inverse of what it is. And so in states like California, Oregon, and Washington, where like, you know, you might have something like the bakery case, the Gresham bakery, mm-hmm, case, that, you know, they could easily rule, like every ruling could go against the interest, not just of trans and non-binary folks and queer folks, but against the interest of working women and people of color.
Here's my observation, mm-hmm, of, you know, basically the last 3 years now. We're starting to see, you know, and
it's happening.
I mean, we're starting to see that the far right interests, the patriarchal interests, the oligarchic interests are so emboldened that they're not stopping at, you know, dealing with LGBTQ, mm-hmm, anti-LGBTQ efforts. They're coming after all of us. And I don't just mean, you know, they're coming after women's rights. This is a big year. It's a big year. Marching is great. I appreciate the sisterhood. Mm-hmm. But there's only one way to really fight back on this. There really is. Turn out and vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people think voting doesn't do anything, but voting has created this unreality we're in right now.
Well, not voting.
Not voting, too.
Not voting.
Yes, exactly, both.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, we digress. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
We've only got about two minutes left, so...
I'm not sorry.
Yeah, no, we're not sorry. No, don't say you're sorry. You're not sorry. So we've just got about 2 minutes left, so let's just remind everyone what's happening March 1st.
Yeah, so the Portland Women's March is happening Sunday, March 1st. It kicks off in the PSU Park Blocks at We'll have some speakers and some exciting stuff to get you motivated starting at noon. And then the march itself will launch around 1 o'clock. And there'll be lots of opportunities to volunteer, get involved. We've got cool T-shirts that are going to press soon, so you don't want to miss your opportunity to get those. And yeah, we hope to see you in the streets, whether you're volunteering or not. And we're really excited to have everybody come together on March 1st, which is a Sunday, starting at noon. By the PSU Park Blocks.
Thank you. It's so great having you here again. And remind me, we're talking tonight with?
Kai. My name is Kai Jensen.
Kai Jensen. Thank you so much, Kai. I really appreciate you taking an hour out to come down here to KBOO and talk to us. Jean, thank you.
Oh, well, as always, thank you. And thank you so much. And thank the entire committee. Yeah, that extends to the entire committee, everybody that's working.
I'll be pleased to pass it along.
Yeah.
Thank you. You've been listening to Transpositive PDX here on 90.7 KBOO Community Radio. Coming up next is Calculated Conversations, so stay tuned and support KBOO. You can find us online at kboo.fm and click the donate button if you like what you're hearing and, you know, support your local community radio station. Thanks so much, everyone, and have a good night.
Good night.
This memory wants you to come.